I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. There are 18 million veterans, according to the U.S. Census. 91% are men, 9% are women, and that's about 10% of the adult population. And while many do manage to handle the transition from military service back to the home front, too many veterans struggle with reentry. The suicide rate for veterans is 1.5 times the rate for the civilian population. The National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine just reported that almost half of veterans do not get the mental health services they need and are entitled to. While yesterday, November 11th, marked Veterans Day, the official federal holiday is today. And today in Radio Times, we talk about the services and supports that veterans need, are entitled to, and deserve. And we have three guests who have joined us here in our Philadelphia studio. Let me introduce them to you. Mike Felker was a U.S. Navy hospital corpsman, a combat medic in the Vietnam War, and he currently serves as a member of Veterans for Peace, an organization he's been a part of since the 1980s. Mike Felker, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Also with us is Anna Stormer. She's program manager for the Women's Veterans Center. That's a community resource center. She's also a trauma counselor, a military spouse, and the WVC is part of the Veterans Multi-Service Center. Anna Stormer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. And rounding out our trio of guests is Judge Patrick Dugan, Chief Judge of the Philadelphia Veterans Court. The court provides a holistic treatment court approach to criminal justice involving veterans. He's a retired captain in the U.S. Army Reserves, and he served in the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Judge Dugan, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good
happy
morning.
Veterans Day.
I was going to say happy Veterans. Is happy Veterans Day? Is that what we say?
You know, Judge? What? Any acknowledgement is fine, but yeah, people do get sometimes get upset. So you certainly don't say that for Memorial
Day. Not for Memorial Day.
No. Yes. But no. Thanks for your service, et cetera. Anything, never forget. But even Happy Veterans Day is an acknowledgement.
Mike, what does this day mean for you, Veterans Day?
Well, for me, in some ways, every day is Veterans Day. I mean, my experience is with me all the time. I was a Navy hospital corpsman. I served as a medic with the Marines in Vietnam. The Marines are part of the Navy, so they use the Navy's medical personnel. I had to deal with Marines stepping on booby traps, landmines, Marines getting shot. And so, in some ways, I mean, I try to keep on going, but sometimes it just feels like it's sort of overwhelming. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad there is this acknowledgement one day a year that people actually might take into account that there are veterans, that our country does go to war. Often the war is not needed, but at least this one day that the majority of the population take notice of this.
Take notice. But does it dredge up memories for you?
Oh, yeah, sure.
How about for you? What does this day mean for you? And your husband served in Afghanistan.
It does. And to me, Veterans Day is an acknowledgement of what's come before us and the work that we have to do. So oftentimes I think people think of folks still serving in uniform and they don't necessarily remember people have been serving in this country since the beginning of time, especially women as well. So to me, this day is, while wonderful, it's also saying, you know, this is the foundation that's been laid and this is all the work that we have to do. People don't stop serving once they come home. That's when it's our job as community providers to say, let us help you transition from this part of your life into another section of your life.
And what does it mean for you, Judge Dugan? I should say that so our listeners know, you enlisted in the Army Reserves in 1981. You served in South Korea, Panama. You re-enlisted during the Iraq War, served again in Iraq and Afghanistan. What does this day mean to you?
It means it's a day that our nation and most of the people will acknowledge the service that many have done. And it's not, it's the, obviously the Army, the Marines, the Navy, the Air Force, the Coast Guard, active, reservists. It's also merchant Marines back in the day. But it's also peacetime veterans, veterans who didn't go to combat, thankfully. But they're serving, and it's dangerous for them. And whenever I get a chance to talk, we also have to make sure we're thanking the families, because the veterans are going downrange or going off to serve. They're being separated from their families. Their families are serving as well. So whenever I have an opportunity, I want to make sure we're thanking the families, because they're doing it too. So, Anna, happy Veterans
Day. Happy Veterans Day to you too, Judge.
Which raises the question, you know, speaking broadly, obviously, whether in certain kinds of ways, psychologically, it's easier to be deployed than to come home. And I wonder from your own experience, Anna, working with veterans, how you see both deployment and then coming back.
I think when you are separating that and when you look at deployment versus coming home, when you are deployed, you're so, from what I've heard, you're so caught into the moment, right? You're living moment to moment, you know, mission to mission. And then when you come home, what is your mission?
Right.
Finding that sense of purpose, finding that sense of self, especially for the women that we see at our facility, they don't often get acknowledged on this day. They say, oh, well, thank you for your husband for serving. Or if they have the bumper sticker or the, you know, license plate, it says, oh, well, was that your father? You know, so making that transition successfully back into our community, mm-hmm. I believe, is on the community as much as it is on the veteran to succeed. And when you're transitioning back from day to day, constant sort of, okay, am I going to survive? What am I doing, you know, from this moment to this moment? That doesn't necessarily translate to civilian life.
No, it doesn't.
And the skills that you need in the time to stay alive become maladaptive. And maladaptive coping skills are what we try to help folks with, and especially coming from a trauma-informed background. I mean, startle reflex keeps you alive because you're jumping, right? But startle reflex in sort of a corporate environment, people would say, you know, what's going on there? You know, what's happening? So us as a community embracing this day, embracing Veterans Day, that's wonderful. But applying that all around and comprehensively, as Judge Dugan, I'm sure, will talk about as well, you know, that's on us to say, let us help you come back. You've served. Let us help make this community available and as prepared for you.
I wonder for you, Mike Felker, whether serving in Vietnam made you a peacenik.
Well, I don't know that I'm a peacenik per se, but I actually was in anti-war demonstrations before I went to into the military. I mean, I did not want to go into the military. I graduated from high school in 67 when I was 17. I did a year at Temple University, and I basically went through all the money I had saved since I was 13. And when I went for my draft physical, I really panicked. I thought, oh, I don't want to go to Vietnam. I don't want to get drafted. And I talked to a Navy recruiter who said I could, if I went in the Navy, I would get Navy journalism school. And I like to write. And I said, well, that sounds good. So I'll go to Navy journalism school. I blues my color. I'll look cute in a sailor suit. And I won't go to Vietnam. And it'll all work out, and I'll get the GI Bill. And then when I got through with boot camp, instead of the journalism school, I got hospital corps school, the medical training, which was like patient care, giving medicines, giving shots, emptying bedpans, that sort of thing. And then we found out that because the Marines are part of the Navy, they use the Navy's medical personnel. Mm-hmm. So then I ended up going through Marine training, and then after working in a hospital, went with them to the Marines.
And you were on the front line.
If there were
front lines,
right?
I mean, Vietnam.
I did. It was usually like a couple of weeks. I was with an infantry unit from January till August of 70, and it was usually like a couple of weeks at a time, out in the field with a platoon, and we would do what they call night ambushes, setting up listening posts, sort of things, and then patrols. Mm-hmm. And as I said, most of the casualties I dealt with were Marines stepping on landmines or they got shot.
Seeing really the horrors of war up close.
To some, yes. I will say when I got to Nam, I was issued a 45, and I was also issued a Geneva Convention card that said I was a non-combatant. And I said, okay, I'm a non-combatant. I don't want to carry a weapon. So for basically most of the time, I didn't carry a weapon, and I got away with that with the Marines. I always appreciate that the Marines let me do that.
Yeah, I hear you. Patrick Dugan, tell us a little bit about Veterans Court and what the philosophy is for that particular court.
The philosophy is that veterans, in many people's opinions, they're some of our best citizens. So when they're done their service and they get arrested, there's some sort of criminal allegation pending against them. We want to keep them out of the system. We do not want them to be churned up in the system. So we bring these veterans in, and we connect them with their benefits and rights that they've earned. So we bring them in, we evaluate what's going on, there's negotiations going on back and forth with the prosecutor, defense attorney, and then we have them assessed either by the VA or the Department of Behavioral Health. What issues brought you into these criminal allegations? Right. Substance abuse, drugs, alcohol, mental health issues, what's going on? So we evaluate them, and then we come up with a treatment plan. If we get them to buy into it, they have to be willing to buy into it. So sometimes I have to twist their arms. But
how do you do that? What do you say?
Well, I convince, I bring mentors in. I talk to them about the same experiences we both had. I'll, you know, talk to somebody about they were in the infantry. I have Marines in my room to talk to the Marines. So we just try to do that bonding to want them to come in, because when they were downrange, they were team members.
Right.
They were team members. When you come home and you're back out of the military, now all of a sudden you don't have that team like that life and death situation. So we try to get that bonding back together in our courtroom. So it's really, I give them, you know, they got a month or two to come in and check it out. And they usually start to buy in it too, because they're going to meetings with fellow veterans. They have a veteran mentor. Plus, I have the VA in the room who's looking to see, are you eligible for money benefits? Are you eligible for education benefits? Hey, do you need a job? We got guys who help you get a job. So it's one of that where we're giving them a big, giant hug, and I'm kind of holding on to them.
Yeah, I was going to say, and not letting them go, right?
I'm trying to keep them in as many as I can. And some of them try to get away, but I'm still trying to tackle them to keep them in my court.
Why wouldn't they want what you're offering, though? Why would they resist it?
Well, because we're stubborn, we're pride, we have pride, we don't want any help.
Right.
I don't want to say, veterans do not want to say, I have an issue. That's your culture. I'm strong, I can do this, I can run up that hill and kill the enemy. I can carry my buddy off the battlefield. That's our mentality, and we do not want to reach
and
out for help.
Someone else needs it more than I do. Someone else, we've experienced
right.
this all the time.
Yes.
I wasn't in combat, I didn't deploy here,
right.
there's all...
I don't want to take my buddy's benefits away.
Benefits, right, exactly.
Because mm-hmm. it's about, we're almost up at a break here, because it's about, in a sense, sacrificing yourself for your fellow...
Greater good.
Marines, greater good.
Greater good.
Fellow Marines
mm-hmm.
soldiers.
Yes.
Definitely.
Well, let's take a very short break, and we'll get back to our conversation. Talking with Judge Patrick Dugan. He's chief judge of the Philadelphia Veterans Court, and he retired as a captain in the U.S. Army Reserve, served in both the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, and a Stormer Program Manager for the Women's Veterans Center. She's a trauma counselor, also a military spouse. And Mike Felker was a U.S. Navy hospital corpsman, a combat medic in the Vietnam War, and a member of Veterans for Peace. And we want to hear from the veterans in our audience, active duty military, of course, and their families. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Much more to talk about after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane. It is Veterans Day, as it is celebrated in this country. We are talking about the services and supports that veterans need, what they're entitled to, and frankly, what they deserve. And I want to talk a little bit about, and Judge Dugan talked about families.
Sure.
What families need, especially if their loved one, whether it's a child or a spouse or a partner, what they are struggling with, and how a family member can be a support.
We see family members as the greatest advocates often to the veteran, because we'll see the family members come in and say, you know, she needs help with this, or, you know, hey, she's telling you that she's taking her medicine, but she's not, or, you know, something's going on with the house, could you talk to her? So we see family members, and I see myself this way as well, as sort of the greatest advocate, because as Judge Dugan mentioned before the break, is they're so less likely to ask for help,
right,
or say someone else is, you know, needs this more than I do, or I don't want to take from the community. So I often ask the family members, you know, with their permission, of course, they're coming in with the veteran, but we will ask them and say, you know, are they really going to their meetings?
Uh-huh.
You know, what's going on with this bill payment? You know, can we help them, you know, stay into the house? Can we help them with this job? Or do you want me to call the boss and say, you know, this is X, Y, and Z is going on? So we see families, and that's truly what motivates me in my position now, is to say, we are here to advocate for you when you are unwilling or unable to advocate for yourself.
It's a lot on a family to do.
Absolutely. But, you know, it's a lot on the service member to serve.
Right, right. Mike, so many thoughts about reentry. And I wonder, even with your work with Veterans for Peace, and I know you have made gun violence, the scourge of gun violence, an issue that you really care about. Is that taking your war experience and focusing your energy on that, has that been helpful to you?
Yes, it's been cathartic. I've done some work with Ceasefire Pennsylvania, Mothers in Charge, Moms Demand Action. I try to write about the issue of gun violence. I've done lobbying at the state and federal level. It's an uphill battle, but I feel that this is an important issue. And from my experiences, what I dealt with, definitely, I will just say I served with a hospital corpsman who stepped on a landmine in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And when he got back in 2000, he sort of went over the edge from PTSD and shot three people dead and ended up dying in prison. And so it's like, I just feel like this is really an important issue, and I think we need to sort of step back and, do we really need assault weapons? Do we need bump stocks? Do we sort of just need to take account of what's happening?
Well, there are parts of Philadelphia, other big cities, that are often called war zones.
Right, right.
Because there's so much gunfire. But has that given you the kind of a community that maybe you didn't have coming back from Vietnam?
Vets for Peace, definitely. Yes, 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 definitely.
And I'm curious for you, Judge Sugan, about your reentry, if I can call it that way, from having served for so many years in the U.S. Army Reserves.
So, you know, I had a 15-year break in service from when I was a paratrooper and infantryman in the 80s. And then at post 9/11, I was able to get back in the Army. And I went to war in Iraq as a 43-year-old man who had a law degree, and I came back with some issues.
Did you?
You know, it was the most, in many ways, it was very rewarding what I actually did in Iraq, but it was also the most horrific thing that I've ever experienced. So I'm 43 years old. Supposedly my brain is mature by then. And what are we doing to 18, 19, 20-year-old men and women who are exposed to combat, both trauma of killing and having their friends be killed? And it's across the board. Women now, women have always been involved in the military in some form. But today, women are on the front lines with us.
Yeah.
And we were only in country for 30 days. And we had a 19-year-old young lady, Nicole Fry, from up in the middle part of our country, who was actually decapitated. She was driving a vehicle, Humvee, unarmored, and an IED went off. And so it's horrible enough to have someone die, but our young ladies are now exposed to this.
Right.
So, you know, the women are, they're not just staying home as spouses. They're on the front line. And I can say, some of the women that I served with, when I had an option of who was going on a mission with me to man a machine gun, I took some ladies with me that were just more, they were at the top level of competency compared to some of the men I served with. So women are serving valiantly. They're sacrificing their blood as well today. And us older veterans need to understand that I experienced it, but I definitely want to give a shout out to the ladies who are downrange with everyone.
Well, these are some of the women, these are some of the people, Anna, that you work with.
Absolutely. This is the community that I've served. I mean, as Judge Dugan pointed out, you know, women have been serving alongside men since the Revolutionary War. They just necessarily haven't gotten the recognition of it.
Right.
Yeah, the recognition of it. So we are proud to have Judge Dugan and other folks who are saying, you know, I served with these women. Acknowledge their service, acknowledge their presence, acknowledge, you know, their contributions, because, you know, they are as notable as many men.
But is it different for women, Betts? You've worked with
both
men and women.
Absolutely. I mean, coming home for the women that I have served, especially at the VMC and especially at the Women's Center, in a unique environment tailored to them. I mean, we see women 2.5 times more likely to engage in suicide than civilian peers. So 2.5 times more likely to engage in suicide than civilian peers. So number one, that's a very harrowing statistic.
It sure is.
25% of post-9/11 women, so women serving after post-9/11, have been assaulted sexually in service, so military sexual trauma. And as the homeless veteran population decreases, the percentage of homeless women veterans is increasing by 7% as of the last statistics. So women do face unique challenges, and as Judge Dugan pointed out talking about his court, the comprehensive services is exactly the right way to go for community-based resources as well. So meeting each individual at their point of need. So if you need help with housing, we can help you with that. If you need help with job training and development, we can help you with that. And what y'all have both been mentioning is fellowship activities. Maintaining that spirit of community is important no matter what your need is.
The way you describe, especially if, 25% of women serving have had to...
Have been assaulted.
So in a certain ways, the enemy is within your
Absolutely.
Own unit.
Absolutely. And your chain of command, the people that are supposed to be keeping you safe sometimes fail you. So there's another additional layer of sort of impact.
Right. I'm thinking about, and I think with certainly the homeless population in Philadelphia, a sizable number of them are people who have served in the Vietnam War. I'm sure that's probably changing with the war since then. But I wonder, Mike, if you could talk a little bit about why that is and what when you have a homeless veteran, I mean, how many failures, I guess, have led to that person being on the streets?
Well, I don't deal directly with homeless vets, but I will say one of the things I feel is that when you're in combat, when like I was 30 days at a time out in the field sleeping on the ground, I think veterans think, okay, I did it before. I wasn't in a shelter, so I can do it again. And I think that might be one of the reasons for the large percentage of homeless veterans, that they'd rather in some ways recreate what they did in the military than go to a shelter.
Just feels familiar.
It feels familiar, right.
And Philadelphia has actually come a long way, though.
Yes,
2015,
right.
We did declare a functional end to veteran homelessness. So the veterans that we are seeing now newly homeless, we are accounting for them. The Veterans Multi-Service Center is part of a huge coalition that works well with the court system to track folks before they enter into homelessness.
Looks like you want to say
something. Yeah, and Mike's right about, you know, the experiences. You go out in the field for 30 days and you got your rucksack and your poncho, and you could live with your poncho liner for 30 days out there. So, yes, the veterans have the mentality to be able to go live out on the street. But there are some great programs in our area. Mm-hmm. And I would say if you know any homeless veteran whatsoever, you can contact any of us. You can certainly contact
Please.
Judge Dugan, and I can help them get housing. But it is they have to want it. The VA, for all they get knocked, they have a pretty good program in terms of helping with the housing now.
Absolutely.
We've have some nice places to put people, to get them back up on their feet, connect them with benefits. So, yeah, I would hope that the veterans that are out there, or anyone, if you see a person holding a sign that says, I'm a veteran, engage them. See if they are, and if they are, refer them over to the multi-service center. Refer them to Judge Dugan. But we can help them, so please reach out to us.
And not just on Veterans Day, and I think that's hugely important, especially for today, where
my
we.
Question away.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry.
No. Go ahead.
Every day.
No, we do give this acknowledgement of saying today, and there's parades, and you know the Eagles had camo on last night. But outside of today, please consider, you know, in February, in March, April, when it's cold.
Absolutely. Let me just reintroduce the three of you. That's Anna Stormer, program manager for the Women's Veterans Center. She's a trauma counselor. She's a military spouse. Also with us, Judge Patrick Dugan, chief judge of the Philadelphia Veterans Court, providing what they describe as a treatment court approach to veterans who've been involved in the criminal justice system. Retired captain of the U.S. Army Reserves, he served in both the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Also served in Panama and South Korea, signing up, I guess, in 1981. And Mike Felker was a U.S. Naval Hospital Corman, a combat medic in the Vietnam War and currently a member of Veterans for Peace. 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Particularly want to hear from the veterans in our audience or certainly active duty military and their families as well. Let me pick up on something, because I think for the civilian population, they feel like they don't know what to say, or they don't know how to have a conversation with someone who has served without either hitting some kind of, you know, difficult part of the conversation or feeling they have to say something to make something better. And I'm looking at you, but I want to hear from all three of you. What is this? Is this a different conversation than we might have with anybody else?
I think just acknowledging in a way that's authentic, saying, you know, hey, maybe I don't know what to say, right? Like the civilian.
And you can say that, right?
That's absolutely allowed. We can tell you, you know, please don't ask people personal questions about, you know, especially for strangers, where they were, how many people they killed, on and on and on. You know, just say, I see you were in the military. I see you served. You know, thank you for contributing to the community.
And thank start
you.
There.
Yeah. Or and just say and say and end start and end there is also a great option. And if the service member wants to elaborate, they will. Some folks don't feel comfortable.
You nodded your head, Mike. You want to add to that?
I just know that when people say thank you for your service, I sort of try to say what I've been through and what I've learned when I was in the military. I appreciate the acknowledgement, but just that, you know, it's not just the service, it's what I learned. It's what we should all be learning from war.
Is that a hard conversation for you to have?
Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But you want someone who will, I guess, what, listen?
Listen.
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 How about for you, Jessica?
What I want people to do when they're talking to service members and families and whatnot, and it's fine to say thank you. And I do it all the time because of my role as a judge. I want to thank people for their services. I'm the MC at the parade, so I want to acknowledge people's service. But I say to people, be a good citizen. And what do I mean by that? When it's your turn to do jury duty, go do it.
Right.
I mean, Mike went to Vietnam, was a combat medic, combat corpsman. You know, get out there and vote. How hard is it to get up and vote? Do your civic duty.
Hmm.
Honor the service. Honor the names on all those walls that we have. Honor them. Honor these families that have been separated. Get out and vote. Do something good for your community. So, you know, this because the service to our nation as veterans and family members, I mean, that's a great sacrifice. And I suggest that everyone else should pick up their part at times.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I remember doing several shows years ago about how the what was described as the other 1%, not the wealthy 1%, but the 1% of the population that actually has served in a war, and how in many ways we're disconnected from what that experience is about. You agree?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I always say right now, we're not a nation at war. We're a military at war.
Right.
The only folks that are downrange right now are the members in the service that are there and their family members. The rest of our nation really isn't paying attention. It's very rare that you see something on the news, what's going on. Every day something occurs to our men and women who are serving. But it's not the news anymore. And I'm not looking for the news coverage, but it's our normal citizens. The neighbors don't even know, oh, where's Johnny? Oh, Johnny's dead. He's over in Iraq right now. Or where is Mary?
Again.
She's in Yemen for the fourth time. So, yeah. And again, it's part of how our political system works. And we haven't had a war since...
A declared war.
Since World War II.
Yes.
We've had conflicts. We rename wars now. And that kind of takes people away. World War II, our whole nation was at war.
Yeah.
After that, it was just the military. When Mike went to Vietnam, it was him and his block that went to war. His family. Other people didn't.
Right.
So we just need to, as a nation, understand what's going on. And we have to be cautious when we put our men and women into these situations. Why are we going to war? Can we look at it before we do it? Because we've made a few mistakes.
Mike, it looks like you want to say something.
I just agree with the judge. Totally. Mike. Yes.
And Mike wearing it. Mike is a veteran for peace. Mike, I believe that the vast majority of veterans feel the same way as you do, because once you see it, you realize how futile it is. We weren't going into Berlin or Tokyo in any of our most recent conflicts or wars. So we really need to think about it. And I respect that you're part of that group, and you're out there trying to keep our young men and women from going somewhere. For what reason, sometimes, we have to ask?
Well, it's interesting. When you hear from military leaders, they're often the most reluctant ones to take a country to war. It's the more civilian advisors and leaders that are more gung-ho. Mike?
Right. I just wish our government had maybe a few more veterans in it that might temper some of the things that go on. Yes.
And who else is in Veterans for Peace? Is it largely Vietnam veterans? Is it a mix?
It goes back. We still have World War II vets who are part of it, Korean War vets, up through Afghanistan and Iraq. It's a wide spectrum. In Philadelphia, most of the active people are Vietnam vets, but we have women who have served post 9/11 in the group. So we're sort of expanding now with different era veterans.
Right. And just sort of expanding what that is about.
Right. I mean, I deal with gun violence. I've dealt with landmines. We deal with the larger issue of militarism, war, all these things.
I mean, you know what a bullet can do or a landmine can do.
Yes. I mean, I've been shot at. I stood on a mine in Nam, but it was meant for a truck, so I didn't set it off.
But because there wasn't enough weight to set it off?
Yes, I didn't have breakfast that morning. I don't know.
Wow.
But I didn't set it off. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Mike Felker, was a U.S. Navy hospital corpsman, a combat medic in the Vietnam War, and he's a member of Veterans for Peace. Judge Patrick Dugan, chief judge of the Philadelphia Veterans Court, and he's also a retired captain in the U.S. Army Reserves, served in the Iraq War and the Afghanistan War, and a Stormer program manager for the Women's Veterans Center. She's a trauma counselor, a military spouse. 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about what it means to serve in the military in this country as we mark Veterans Day. I wonder if I could turn back to you, Judge Dugan, talking a little bit about, so how does someone get referred to Veterans Court in Philadelphia? And you talked about how you try to kind of embrace these men and women and hold on to them. But it has been described as a voluntary court.
Yes, and I explain that to them when they come in. So what happens is a veteran gets arrested, and there's some paperwork, information you fill out, your name, et cetera, your date of birth. And we've now gotten where there's a box to check if you're a veteran. If they're a veteran, that file will go to the that will be in a separate pile for the DAs. They'll give it to the specially assigned district attorney. The district attorney will look at it, and then we'll bring them into court, and there we're vetting that veteran. We want to make sure you have a DD-214. You know, the district attorney is looking at the nature of the crime. District attorney talks to the victims, the defenders, the attorneys. They're looking at the evidence. They'll sit down and make a deal. So while they're negotiating, we start the assessment to try to get them to buy in. I make all the first time these folks are in my courtroom, they have to sit and watch for 2 hours. So they'll see me giving out trinkets for something well done. I'll give out a pen that says the Army on it to somebody for doing good, or a little foam star. But I'll also give out essays, maybe sanction somebody to a jail, go to jail for the weekend. So they see the good and the bad. We get reports of, you know, what our other defendants, other veterans are doing. So I give them a flavor of what it is.
Yeah.
And usually by the end of the day, when it's their turn to talk to me, they're usually starting to buy into it. They change their attitudes. But after we have them for a little bit, most of them buy in 100%. But they have to volunteer.
You match them with a mentor, though, don't you?
Also, yeah, we have mentors. So we have a group of at least a dozen men and women who are in our courtroom every week.
Right.
All veterans. Some of them have – a couple of them are graduates of my program. So they're former They're criminals. They're people with records. They're Marines who served in Iraq and Vietnam, but they have criminal records, and some of them don't. But they're the ones who are, they have a buddy system. And the mentors don't tell me what's going on. It's just peer-to-peer. And we try to marry them up, and that works wonders. They'll call each other in the middle of the night. Help me. I'm thinking, I want to go out and get, I want to go out and get high.
And is it a lot of substance abuse related problems? Is that what,
yes,
what brings them to the court?
Yeah, the substance abuse, alcohol, drugs, and mental health. I got to say that's above 70% of our participants.
Wow.
And a lot of time it's a mix of that batch.
And what does that tell us, Anna? I do want to get some callers in. Just dealing with the trauma, I guess, of war is you, it's easy to turn to some kind of substance to help
absolutely
mitigate
it's,
those feelings.
It's the maladaptive coping skills that I mentioned before. So what kept you alive while you were in service, what kept you coming home is not necessarily what's going to make you successful here in civilian life. So by returning to those or by self-medicating or by not saying, hey, I need help or not admitting I'm having these challenges, you try to fix a problem like yourself.
Sure.
And that's very common in the veteran community. And that's why comprehensive resources and matching people at their individual point of need is so important.
Let me get some callers in. We've got Dave calling us from Wilmington, Delaware. And Dave, go ahead. You're on the air. Hi there, Dave.
Hi.
Hi there.
Can you hear me?
Yes, indeed. Go ahead.
Can
you're
hear
on
me?
The air. Yep. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to comment that I think the captain, whom I do not remember his name, I apologize, was pretty much spot on in that you have to move forward. You have, as the vet, have to find the way to move forward and not, I am a vet myself and I've been in war. You have to get out of that, to get out of that cycle. Start, whatever method works is what works for you. It may be different for everybody, but that's the key, is moving forward, not sitting there and fomenting that hate or anger.
And Dave, I'm curious, what has worked for you?
What worked for me was meditation and screaming and yelling a lot, that getting with a group and getting really angry. But after I got all that, not all the anger out, but a lot of it out, I can meditate. It helps a lot.
It helps a lot. Well, I appreciate the call, and I thank you for your service as well. Mike, anything you want to say back to Dave?
When I got back from Vietnam in the 70s and was living in San Francisco, I did a lot of yoga, and it helped. And I'm planning when I retire to get back and doing yoga, because I think meditation and that sort of thing does help.
Yes.
And this is the judge. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, we've had some yoga instructors come in and help some of our veterans. And we have groups, an organization, Red, White, and Blue, who does a lot of physical training. So we get some of our guys who will go with them in the morning to do PT to help them relieve some of that pressure,
right,
to meditate. We all have to find outlets. So, yes, it does work.
You want to add to that, Anna?
Yeah, we the Women's Center has Wellness Wednesdays. So once a month we have wellness fellowship activities. We've done yoga. We did a big hike at Bartram's Garden. So getting out and being able to be physical together and sort of finding that fellowship activity while sort of engaging is hugely important to our community.
We have a comment saying, I want to thank the guest who said that women are serving in battle. My sister served 2 terms in Iraq, 1 in Afghanistan. I'm astonished by the number of people who assume that she wasn't in battle.
Right.
Let's underscore that with all three of you. But Anna, is that true for the women that you work with, that
absolutely,
people just do not recognize what it is that they have been through?
Absolutely. And the women themselves often don't realize that they themselves are a veteran. I mean, almost once a week, almost twice a week, we have women come in and say, oh, I served blank time to blank time. Do you have anything here for me?
Wow.
Saying, this whole facility is for you. This whole comprehensive resource is for you.
The feeling somehow that I'm that not entitled, I don't
exactly,
deserve.
Exactly. There's always a but I. But I. Get past the but I didn't and come in and see us, and we will connect you to what you need.
A question from Ed. Sometimes people serve abroad as private contractors. These people aren't always considered veterans. Do they get any help? I guess I'm back at you, Anna. Do we know the answer to that? If you're a private contractor?
I will say that they're not getting help.
They're not.
What they're doing is they're going to work for some organizations. Some of them are good. Some of them have been bad. But they're going down there, making double or triple what the folks in military uniform are. I don't know that those companies are taking care of them. It was my experience with the contractors that I worked with. They were in country. They worked for a while, made nice money, and they just went home to their family. Right. I had a few of them come visit me in Philadelphia, and I'm not aware of any treatment that they're getting. And I would highly recommend that they do, because some of the stuff that they're doing, you know, some of these folks are former Special Forces folks, and our government is putting them in situations that we've put our Special Forces and Rangers in, but we don't want to send that uniform in there for whatever reason. So they're dealing with a lot of trauma. They're getting shot. They're killing. So, yes, they need help as well.
And but they don't have that community or any form of a community.
Or recognition, really. Necessarily.
Right. When they're killed, they're not put on a wall here, so... It's a tough way to make a buck.
It sure is. Again, it's Veterans Day. We are talking about what veterans need and deserve, what they're entitled to. And you can join us, 1-888-477-9499. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. And again, I'm particularly interested in hearing from the veterans, active duty military, and their families. Mike, let me turn to you. And were you out when you were in the military? I mean, this was obviously before our current military, but how was that for you?
Okay, well, we've gone to another level now.
We have.
Okay, so yes, I am gay. No, I was not quote-unquote out. I mean, I probably known I was gay since I was 4 years old, but right. There were issues. So no, I was not out. I came out after I got out of the service, 73.
Right.
And I will say, when I was living in San Francisco, it was easier to be a gay man than it was to reveal that you were a Vietnam vet. I was called a killer. I was called a murderer. Mm. I was accused of being a war criminal. I was not out in the service, but I have been out basically since 73.
Since 73.
And I have gotten a great deal of support from Veterans for Peace as a gay vet. We participate in the Veterans Parade, but we also participate in the Gay Pride Parade. Yes.
But you just said a really profound thing, which was it was easier to be out as gay than to and essentially be out as a Vietnam veteran.
Right. Things changed in the late 80s, late 70s, early 80s. But at least in this mid 70s in San Francisco, it was not a good idea to say you were a Vietnam vet.
Right. Here's a comment from Richard. He says, I served stateside during Vietnam as a chaplain's assistant, perhaps because of my job and where I spent my time. I have a different experience than most vets. When I hung up the green suit, I put that part of my life behind me, more or less. Mm-hmm. And obviously everyone's experience of either being in combat or serving is going to be different. But is that, from your experience, Anna, does that kind of make sense to you?
It makes perfect sense. I mean, how people choose to serve and how they contribute and what their own individual, exit looks like is completely up to that, you know, subjective individual. We see that with the women a lot, is they'll say, especially if they were one of the ones who are survivors of either military sexual trauma or domestic abuse, we see that they say, you know, I leave that part behind me. That was in my past. That was something I did a long time ago. But we don't necessarily think about what that means in their day-to-day life.
Right. To leave a whole part of yourself behind you.
Exactly. And to not acknowledge this big chunk. And if you're not acknowledging this big chunk, you're not necessarily moving forward successfully. So that is why our community is so important and why it's so vital to the Women's Veterans Center to have a place separate where if you want to talk about something, you can. If you don't want to talk about, you're still welcome to come.
Well, I would think that has to come up in your courtroom as well. I mean, part of if it's a treatment court, you have to deal with the whole person.
Absolutely. And with that, sometimes I have to tell the veteran that, yes, you served your nation. You were a chaplain's assistant at Fort Dix. You served a purpose.
Right.
And by the grace of God, you weren't sent at that time that they didn't put you in a horrible place like Vietnam.
Right.
You said chaplain's assistant. My unit... We had a chaplain assistant with us in Iraq, and he came home with a Purple Heart, got hit with shrapnel in his backside. So, you know, Mike was a corpsman. He thought he was going to be a journalist.
Right.
When you go in the military, you don't know where our commander-in-chief is going to send you. So the commander-in-chief sent Mike to a nice location as opposed to some people had to go into Vietnam. So that's usually not your choice. You can sign up for it, but the commander in chief can change it. So sometimes I struggle with some of my veterans. I didn't go to war, Your Honor, but I still
want. So I'm not.
Right.
Entitled.
I'm not worthy
back to
of
that,
this.
But, yeah.
Right. And I'm like, you served. Let's see if there's any benefits we can connect you with while we're trying to help you with this criminal case. Now, I do want to say, because people will hear this and think we're soft on these guys, I am not soft on my veterans. They have to do much more in my courtroom for Veterans Court than any other person that's on my probation. I only do Veterans Court one day. The other 4 days, I'm in regular criminal court. Those folks get their deals as well. But in Veterans Court, they're going to 3 or 4 different places for treatment. I'm getting reports. They're reporting to me often. We're checking their urines, home visits, much more intense than in other courtrooms. So I don't want people to think it's a freebie, because it's not. We're trying to reconnect them to who they are inside.
And we should add that the recidivism rate in your court is less than 10%.
That's correct.
Just and to underscore what you
just
said.
Yes, as opposed to 40 or 47 or 53%. The numbers are outrageous, the recidivism rate in our typical criminal environment, criminal courtroom environment. Treatment courts and Veterans Court, they work.
And this is something we were talking about off the air, but just as someone who has been a trauma counselor, dealing with some of this really serious, heartfelt, and in some cases really disturbing experiences, what is that like for a trauma counselor?
Well, it's what I chose to do. I mean, I love the community that I'm called to serve. I mean, I'm connected both personally and professionally to the veteran world. And I love, shout out to my ladies at the Women's Veteran Center. You guys keep me coming to work every single day. But it does bear a burden. And if you're not aware of what you're taking on and you're not, you know, going in with both eyes open, there is a huge level of burnout that can happen. And there's a huge level of, you know, you are here to serve a community. This isn't about me personally. This is about what I can do to lift up a community. And that means taking the good. You know, we were just in the parade, had a wonderful time with the heavier, sort of more traumatic events. So I'm lucky that, you know, I have a wonderful support system. My husband completely understands being a veteran himself and, you know, wonderful friends and a great community. And I will have to say, along with Judge Dugan as well, that, you know, Philadelphia is a very receptive community to our veterans. I do have to give acknowledgement to the partnerships and the other nonprofits that we work with, because when you say you're a veteran and you are here in Philadelphia, we do are able to connect you to what we can. And the private sector, too.
And the private sector, too. And I read just in Philadelphia alone, 63,800 veterans. Does that seem about right?
I've heard the number about 80,000.
80. About 80? I would say a little bit higher than
okay.
that, yeah.
80,000. And we're almost out of time here, Mike. I mean, do you feel like this has been a supportive environment for you, this city, this region?
Yes. I mean, yes, definitely. I mean, there were so many organizations, like I say, like Ceasefire Pennsylvania and Mothers in Charge and Moms Demand Action. Yes, I think this has been a very supportive region. And I moved back here in 1990, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah. Well, on that note, my thanks to all three of you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for joining us today in Radio Times. Mike Vilker, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
You're welcome. U.S. Navy Hospital Corpsman, combat medic in the Vietnam War, currently a member of Veterans for Peace. Judge Patrick Dugan is the chief judge of the Philadelphia Veterans Court, also retired a captain in the U.S. Army Reserves, and a Stormer program manager for the Women's Veterans Center, a trauma counselor, military spouse. All three of you, again, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times as we marked Veterans Day. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us.